You're listening to Real Presence Live on the Real Presence Radio Network. Join the conversation on our Facebook page or on Twitter. And be sure to like and follow us for more great Catholic content. Now, back to the show.
Okay, we're back. My name is Jack Canelli, and with me is my wife, Doreen. We'll be your host for this second half hour of Real Presence Live. Time is going fast for us today. And on the line we have for our next segment, we have Jason Adkins, who I believe title would be Executive Director, Jason?
Oh. That's correct. So I'm okay. Executive Director of the Minnesota Catholic Conference, which is the Conference of Bishops. The bishops are the conference, and we are the staff, and we bring their public policy initiatives to the Minnesota Legislature, but also to selected members of Congress as well.
Great. And there are things going on in the Minnesota Legislature that we think you should update our listeners on. So why don't you just go ahead and take them from there. You can sort of introduce yourself a little further if you like, and then just kind of get into the substance.
So we advocate for a whole spectrum of issues across the legislative gamut, and so everything from the sanctity of life and opposing assisted suicide to opposing the expansion of gambling, because we think it's going to be harmful to families. It's going to create greater financial problems in families, stress, put financial stress on families, especially low-income families, create real problems for those with addiction. So putting a casino in everyone's pocket is going to have disastrous effects. And we're opposing legislation to do just that and to really blow open the gambling industry and the sportsbook betting industry here in Minnesota. There's only a constitutional mandated deadline of May 20th. So legislators have only a few weeks left to get all the work done. We're hoping that we can run the clock out, no pun intended, on the gambling expansion bill and help people understand that this is going to have serious problems for families, and it's a step forward that Minnesota should not be taking, which really constitute a step backwards. So that's something that we're really paying attention to as the session winds down. Fortunately, we don't believe assisted suicide legislation is likely to pass this year because of a diverse group of advocates, from veterans groups to advocates for those with disabilities, doctors and nurses, faith leaders, so many people stepping forward to say that assisted suicide is not just a slippery slope, but could be a cliff in terms of the way in which it will exacerbate healthcare disparities endanger the elderly. The bill has a lack of safeguards in it for the elderly that could perpetrate elder abuse. So, and we're seeing what's going on in Canada with assisted suicide right now, and it's very, very troubling. And we hope that this session will end without assisted suicide legislation being passed. So a really important issue that we're keeping tabs on, and with a good diverse group of supporters, that's not going to move forward this year. There's a lot of other things I'd love to talk about, but just wanted to pause there and see if you had any questions.
Well, I guess the question that I have is, do you sometimes feel like you're swimming against the cultural tide there?
Well, swimming is a good analogy. We like to say that culture is upstream of politics, or politics is downstream of culture. Oftentimes things come to the Capitol and they're sort of baked in culturally already. And so, yeah, there's definitely a sense of swimming upstream when it comes to the political dynamics, because when things become legislation, it's oftentimes too late. And assisted suicide or some of the life issues are perfect examples of that, where you really have to engage the culture upstream if you want to have positive effects downstream. I can say, though, that on the suicide issue, people are rethinking that precisely because of the way in which it does and could have real impacts on healthcare disparities. It could endanger the elderly and the vulnerable, and it's not the state that we want to create for ourselves. We want to make Minnesota a place where we create policies that do better to care for everyone, not kill them. And so that message is really resonating. How do we create a state where people are cared for, that we accompany with them throughout their healthcare journey and throughout the life's journey, and to offer true compassionate care at the end of life, walking with them? Patients are saying, take my hand, not my life. And that's what we want to do as a state. How do we create a good ecosystem of healthcare policies that make assisted suicide unthinkable? Pain management is not the reason why people choose assisted suicide in other states where it's legal. They choose it because they feel abandoned, they feel they don't have any other options. So the goal is to create more healthcare options to make people feel secure at the end of life. People already do have the ability to choose their care at the end of life. That includes receiving care, or withdrawing or withholding care. So we do have choice at the end of life. What we need to create is more options for people, not fewer options, that help people get good care. I think that message is really resonating at the cultural level. You're seeing editorial boards such as in Fargo and Rochester and Duluth ask serious questions about assisted suicide legalization. We're getting a lot of great op-eds into the newspapers, and people are having these conversations of rethinking this. It's not just about freedom. It's not just about bodily autonomy. It's about what are the impact of this choice on the healthcare choices of everyone else. When care is expensive and killing is cheap, what will that ultimately mean for our healthcare delivery system on the doctor-patient relationship and other healthcare dynamics? And that message at the cultural level is resonating such that at the political level, we're seeing that assisted suicide legislation has been stalled for 10 years and is not likely to pass this year as either. So those kitchen table conversations, those conversations in public and the media, they really matter such that when you get into the halls of the legislature, you can have more productive conversations and more productive engagement around some of these questions.
Okay, yeah. I want to switch gears a little bit on us. You know, one of the topics that we want to focus on is apparently there's a bill in Minnesota that prohibits organizations from having policies that prevent or discourage mandatory or voluntary reporting of child maltreatment. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, the Catholic Church, of course, has learned some painful lessons about sex abuse and sex abuse cover-ups and organizational cultures that don't create mechanisms of accountability that put children and vulnerable people in danger. And we've come up from the other side of that, having learned a lot of lessons, having recompensed victims. And now we're working proactively to be a leader in that area and to put better policies in place. So since all the bankruptcies and challenges here in Minnesota with regard to sex abuse, what can we do to improve the situation and be a leader by showing all the good policies and practices that we are implementing in our churches, in our schools, and how can we translate that into other contexts for other organizations? Because we know that child sex abuse is not simply a Catholic Church problem. It is a society-wide problem. Like you're seeing in the documentaries about things like Nickelodeon and Disney, that there are all sorts of organizational cultures that perpetrate sex abuse. And that's not, again, a Catholic Church phenomenon only. It's a social-wide phenomenon. So the bill that you're mentioning, what it does is to prevent organizations from putting policies in place that prevent mandatory reporters from reporting, from doing their job when they see or hear evidence of child sex abuse and child maltreatment, and at the same time providing penalties for those who do impede reporting. And this is a real-life dynamic where you have, again, organizational cultures that are putting things in place that prevent child protection. And so we are supporting legislation, House File 4793, which authored by Representative Nash, that was put in the House Public Safety Omnibus Bill. We're hoping that passes the Senate as well. That will, we think, speak to the heart of the problem, which is, again, combating organizational cultures that thwart reporting and child protection measures as a matter of policy within those organizations. So a really, really important bill. Some of the things I've mentioned already show the breadth of the legislation that Minnesota Catholic Conference is working on, all of it, which is to benefit the public and to benefit the common good. So how do we create policies that promote human dignity and human flourishing? So whether it's thwarting gambling expansion, which impedes human flourishing and human well-being, protection of the sanctity of life, such as opposing assisted suicide, but also the dignity of the human person in promoting mechanisms that engage and enhance child protection measures.
I'm curious, the bill that we're talking about on the requiring, you know, reporting of maltreatment of children, it seems like a no-brainer, but has there been opposition to it? And do they actually come up in front of a hearing committee and identify themselves and say, we don't like this?
Well, the bill hasn't been heard in committee, but it was amended into the public safety omnibus after some very moving testimony from Representative Nash, who's an abuse victim himself. So we're hoping that the same thing happens in the Senate, that bill, even though it didn't meet policy deadlines, gets amended in either on the floor or during conference committee. But no, there has not been a public opponent of that bill so far, and it would be very interesting to see if groups or organizations do come forward. It does seem like a no-brainer. As you said, we should always put the well-being of children first and foremost in policy, but that, as we know from our own experience, doesn't always happen, sadly, and that's why these strong measures need to be put in place to do so and to combat those corrupt organizational cultures.
It seems like, to some extent, I wonder if sometimes you feel like you're, David fighting Goliath, and I think that's maybe there are partnerships that you enter into that you could talk about with about 90 seconds left to go in this segment.
Sure, and that's, that's part of how our Lord often shows his hand, is these David and Goliath dynamics. Sometimes, we like to say that sometimes when we lose, we win. Just like on the cross, it seemed like our Lord lost, but in reality, that was the throne of victory. So that's the dynamic that we're always facing. We're always challenging the powers and principalities of this world who seem well-funded, and we are underfunded, which is why we need to work together in coalitions at an interface level, through things like the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition to combat poverty in an ecumenical and interfaith way, or through the Minnesota Alliance for Ethical Healthcare to bring together 50 diverse partners combating assisted suicide. So working within and working to enable coalitions is really, really important to get things done. Legislators love seeing when diverse groups come together around common goals. And we like to say that our mission is to build common ground for the common good. And the Catholic Church in Minnesota, through the Minnesota Catholic Conference, is a leader in doing that, spearheading coalitions and bringing people together to get things done. And so that's really one of the blessings of our work that makes it a lot of fun, is to work with so many different people to build common ground for the common good.
Okay, Jason, we're coming up to the end of the segment. We want to thank you for being on, and I know you'll be on again because it's important for our listeners to keep up to date on what's going on in the various legislatures throughout our listening area. So with that, we'll thank you. And for our listeners, stay tuned. We're going to be talking about the Newman Guide on Grad Schools coming up.
Stay with us. There's more Real Presence Live to come on the Real Presence Radio Network.
Daily Meditations of Pope Benedict XVI, presented by Leonardo DeFilippis of St. Luke Productions.
The reasonableness of the universe. The more we know of the universe, the more profoundly we are struck by a reason whose ways we can only contemplate with astonishment. In pursuing them, we can see anew that creating intelligence to whom we owe our own reason. Albert Einstein once said that in the laws of nature there is revealed such a superior reason that everything significant which has arisen out of human thought and arrangement is, in comparison with it, the merest empty reflection. We see revealed a powerful reason that holds the universe together, and we are penetrating ever deeper into what is smallest, into the cell, and into the primordial units of life. Physics and biology and the natural sciences in general have given us a new and unheard-of creation account with vast new images which let us recognize the face of the Creator and which make us realize once again that at the very beginning and foundation of all being there is a creating intelligence. The universe is not the product of darkness and unreason. It comes from intelligence, freedom, and from the beauty that is identical with love. Seeing this gives us the courage to keep on living, and it empowers us, comforted thereby, to take upon ourselves the adventure of life.
This meditation is taken from Benedictus, published by Ignatius Press and Magnificat, and produced by St. Luke Productions. Learn more at stlukeproductions.com.